This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
And a good Thursday morning to you. Not just a Thursday, it is a throwback Thursday. But in a week, we will be having the NFL draft. So is there news? Of course there's news. We're going to get to that in the show today. Also, the NFL owners have met to try to sort out their rules and method of operations for 2021. Some things were interesting, some things not bad, some things pretty good, and some things I scratched my head about. We'll go over some of those as well. Also, Steph Curry's remarkable run of 30-plus points came to an end, but he's garnering some MVP conversations, and because of that, it brings back a very old sports debate, which is, can you win an MVP on a team that's not really winning? If you're the best team on a team that's sort of, meh, can you still be a most valuable player? Some people think so, because his remarkable run has put Golden State at least in a position to be in the conversation for one of the play-in games for the on the outside looking in on the Western Conference. We'll discuss that coming up on the show today. But today is Throwback Thursday, so we've kind of got two things going on today. Today is Earth Day, so we're going to celebrate that a little bit as best we know how with some music about the planet. And also, today is the 11th anniversary of the 2010 NFL Draft. Now, why is that important? Because the 2010 NFL Draft was the first draft that was done in primetime. It was the first time the draft decided, hey, you know what? People seem to like this. Would they like it if it was on a Thursday night in primetime after they got home from work? Well, we did. Not only did we like it, we really liked it. And since then, the draft has become more and more of a spectacle. But it all started 11 years ago when the NFL went bold and took something that was, that for the most part, is just doing work without any, you know, real sort of pageantry, and created pageantry around it. We'll talk about that and some of the interesting picks of 2010, including one where I still pat myself on the back for. We'll talk about that coming up. It's a Throwback Thursday. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Packed hour coming up on Sports Map Radio.
Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony B and Ron Culver.
All right, our music today is going to be about planet Earth. It's Earth Day today. Also, the 11th anniversary of the 2010 NFL Draft on a Throwback Thursday, held at Radio City Music Hall in New York, and it was in prime time. The Thursday night. It was the first time they ever played around with this idea. Spreading the draft out over the 3 days instead of the two. And again, giving you primetime round one, which is, you know, which was brilliant at the time. But I actually didn't like it. I actually thought it wouldn't work. Stupid me. I literally was like, I don't know if the NFL is doing good on this. I kind of like it on Saturday. And
are they jumping the shark?
Yeah. That's kind of the thought, right? It's like when your friend or somebody you know is thinking way too highly of a project, and you're like, you might want to tone that down a little bit. Like, you know, I thought, look, the NFL draft, you got this pretty good thing on the weekends. People kind of gear up for it, but I don't know, prime time? Boy, was I dead wrong. This became one of the highest rated events in sports. And it was actually brilliant. They had like nearly 8 million people watched it. I think it's gone up over the years. They've taken it on the road now. They've really made it the extravaganza that it is. And it all started 11 years ago when they took this thing that they saw was growing. There was no doubt the Saturday and Sunday drafts were still really popular and growing in popularity. And, you know, they read the tea leaves and they kind of figured that this would work on a primetime venue. And it did. And it did. And you know what? Kudos to them, because what they saw was, wait a minute. If we're getting the kind of numbers for a draft that other sports are getting that are in prime time, why wouldn't we be prime time? Like if an NBA playoff game that's played on a Thursday night is drawing X amount of numbers, and our draft on Saturdays are getting almost those kind of numbers. Why wouldn't we try to make it a primetime event? But a couple of things about the 2010 draft that occurred on this date 11 years ago. One, it was the last time you could pay anything you wanted for rookies coming in, because the number one overall pick was Sam Bradford. And what's the joke about Sam Bradford? Has anybody made more money in a lifetime doing nothing than Sam Bradford playing quarterback in the National Football League? Never was a star, never was a Pro Bowler, bounced around the league, never even came close to taking the team to a Super Bowl.
Is he still on a team?
I don't think he is, to be honest with you.
Because he was one of those that just all of a sudden was like, oh, I didn't know Sam Bradford was on that team.
I think Sam Bradford made close to $17 billion playing in the National Football League.
I don't think you're wrong.
He made a fortune, an absolute fortune. And after that, they went, no. Ndamukong Suh was taken second overall by Detroit, and Gerald McCoy was taken third by Tampa Bay. Trent Williams, the offensive tackle, went fourth to Washington, and Eric Berry, safety out of Tennessee, went fifth to Kansas City. So those were the top five picks 11 years ago in the first primetime draft. But you know where I pat myself on the back? This is the one of the few things I do get right. I was a big Tim Tebow's going in the first round guy. So much so, I was working in South Carolina, and I was the morning show at the station, and the guys that were doing the afternoon show actually took my clip of me saying Tim Tebow would be a first round pick and played it and just laughed at it and made fun of it. And they actually made bets with me that that would never happen. And I said, guys, I don't think you're reading the draft right. You don't, if you've been covering this draft for a long time, and I have, I've covered the NFL draft for a team from my time covering the Patriots when I first got into the sports media business to all the years that I covered the Broncos. I showed up at the facility. I did my due diligence. I did my research, followed it closely, all of those things for years and years and years. And I said, guys, when you have a player like this, there's always somebody in the draft that is going to take a chance. There's always the wild card team that goes, yep, when everybody says no, I say yes. I don't know who that team is. And I said, I don't know. I kind of was leaning towards the Patriots at the time. I said, there's always one outlaw in the draft in the opening round that says, nope, I got him. And I said, I guarantee you this is going to take place. I had no idea it would be Denver. And it was from a pick they got from Baltimore. They already had taken Demaryius Thomas earlier in the draft, but then they got a pick from Baltimore, and Josh McDaniels took Tim Tebow. And I remember I was kind of having a good night that night, you know, with the libations, and I was texting all of those guys from the station and just laughing my tail off at them. I said, and I guarantee
did they all start with C?
Yeah,
told you.
I did. Told you. And by the way, and I also said, and I guarantee you I'm not going to see a nickel of any of those bets that we made. And sure enough, I never did. I never saw a dime from all those bets that we made. Still waiting on that money 11 years later. But it was just, I mean, and it wasn't a bold, like, I didn't go out on a limb. There were a lot of people who felt the same way I did. Frank Schwab and I had talked about it, of Yahoo Sports had talked about it too. There's just this feeling that he, look, not all players like that, but there was something about the way he dominated college football. And he's probably one of the most successful college football players of all time, given his records, his national championships, his place in the Heisman Trophy list, winning it as a sophomore and then showing up as a finalist the following 2 years of his career. There was just something about him that you could go, man, that guy can't throw a lick, but there's just, I don't know, I'm going to be the guy that fixes him. And that became one of the big stories of that draft. But again, Sam Bradford going number one to the Rams 11 years ago in prime time, and we are still doing it today, prime time NFL.
Because it worked.
It worked. It really did work. It was a brilliant maneuver. And you know what's funny? It's one of those things that once I realized that the draft on primetime was going to be successful, that made everything the draft became. I said, I'm never challenging them again on anything. They can do whatever. They can put it on the moon. I don't care. They could hold the draft in another country, and I would believe the mindset of it, right? I just, the way they read everything correctly, that this would be a big, big television deal. And like we were talking about last week, just earlier this week, I should say, the idea that this no longer became a method of just business. Because, be honest with you, you could do the draft without any television cameras at all, right? You don't need people to see. The NFL could just go, here, we just did seven rounds. Here's our press release. They could do it that way. But why? When everybody likes it and everybody talks about it and everybody buzzes about it. So why not have a red carpet? Why not take it on the road? Why not do it in front of huge crowds of people, an outdoor arena? Why not have a boat, you know, drive the players up to the stage like they were going to do last year in Las Vegas before COVID? Why not do any of it? Absolutely. Make it as much of a show as you possibly can. Because the flip side and the huge alternative is, again, them just going, here's all the picks. There you go. Just dissect that however you want. But we did this behind closed doors. Here you go. Like, think how important. Remember last year how important that the draft was to us as a society?
Yes.
Like, we were just like, come on.
We were
like, nobody
starvation.
Was doing anything. Nobody was doing anything. Sports shut down in mid-March. There was nothing. Nothing even tried to do anything. Nobody tried to get back in some capacity. Nobody knew how to do this. And the draft said, we're gonna do this. And it's going to take every television engineer that we know to pull this off. But we are going to pull this off. And there were some bright moments and there was some bad humor by the commissioner. But overall, it was very, I think it's historic, because I think we'll remember, when we remember COVID in sports, we'll remember the draft and Goodell in his basement and getting drunk as the night went on. I use that term loosely, of course, but he was certainly
yeah, but you're
having
accurate,
a good time.
So it's
he
all
was
right.
certainly having a good time as the night was going on. Like, by the 31st pick, he was like, all right, I'm kind of tired of this.
You know, looking over this draft, not a bad draft.
Not a bad draft is all. A lot of Pro Bowlers in it.
Yeah, a lot of Pro Bowlers in it. New England took two tight ends in this draft.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
One of them more famous than the other one.
Yep, that's
or
right.
Infamous.
Yep, right. Exactly.
One, so you had Gronk go in the second round, and then they decided, yeah, you know what, in the fifth round, let's take a guy named Aaron Hernandez.
Let's take Aaron Hernandez. Exactly. You had Marquise Pouncey for the Steelers, one of the stalwarts of the offensive line. Remember, yeah. He just retired, and him and Ben had a fantastic
yeah,
relationship.
But not their – would you say that was their best pick in this draft?
I'll have to go over some of the other
later
ones.
In the sixth round, they picked up a little-known wide receiver named Antonio Brown.
Oh, that's right. They picked up Antonio Brown in this draft. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But it is amazing. I mean, it's 2010.
Super Bowl champion Antonio
that's
Brown.
Right. That's right. So it's 11 years old, right? So, I mean, some of these players are still playing.
Yep, that's
which
right.
is pretty impressive.
Pretty
I mean,
good.
The first name on the list that I could tell was Jason Pierre-Paul.
That's right, Jason. And playing with half a hand.
Half a hand. Super Bowl right. champion. Playing right. with Ndamukong Suh.
All right, coming up later in the show, we're going to talk about the NFL owners. They have gotten together. Again, they're just kind of go over some rules and some news and notes from what they want in 2021. Some of them I like, and some of them I'm like, you could have done a better job. But just a reminder, earn a $5 rebate by trading up any non-contact thermometer towards an Exergen purchased at any retailer. Accuracy matters when it comes to taking your temperature. Exergen temporal artery thermometers are backed by more than 80 published peer-reviewed clinical studies. Visit Exergen.com. All right, coming up, the MVP talk for Steph Curry. Is it legitimate? It's a very old sports debate. That's next, coming up on Sports Map Radio.
The Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along. It is Earth Day today. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts for their spring break deals on lawn and garden batteries, tools, brake kits, and more. Kick off the season right with fresh batteries of your lawn and garden gear. For a limited time, purchase any Superstart lawn and garden battery. You get a $10 gift card after a mail-in rebate. How great is that? Don't miss out on the savings. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. All right, it is Earth Day. Can I say something that
controversial?
Controversial. You can.
All right, let's go, Greta.
If you're wrong... if you think I'm wrong, just come right out and say, that's stupid. Because I've always believed this. Every time we get to Earth Day, there's this, save the planet! Save the planet! Save the planet! The planet doesn't need saving. We need saving. The planet has survived asteroid attacks. The planet has survived volcano eruptions. The planet has survived all sorts of temperature changes, ice ages, super hot, forming lava, everything. We want it to be what we want it to be so we can stay alive on it. Does that make sense?
Yep.
All right. Just no,
it's,
sure.
It's like this. Like, we're not, this like is the way.
Goes, oh, look at the Earth. The Earth is ailing. The Earth is like, I'm not ailing. You're going to ail on it if you continue what you're doing. I'll survive. Like, the Earth is probably like, look, I don't care. Like, I'm surviving.
No, exactly. It's the
you
Earth.
You guys won't.
The Earth will find a way to fix itself.
Always has.
It always has.
Always has. It's 4 billion years old. It has gone through everything, and it's still kicking, and it's still producing life. We may find it difficult to live on it at certain temperatures and certain ways the climate is. But do you think the Earth is like a hurricane, more hurricanes? Oh, no. No, we say that.
Yep.
Like, we have a problem with that.
Now, I agree that, you know, we probably are a cause that, you know, with just how we live.
Oh, no, that's not my argument.
No, I know.
That's
I know.
That's not my argument. My but argument is when we say that's, save the planet, we should be reassessing
yeah,
it to
save
mankind so we can live on. Because that's really the goal. When we want to change, when we say we have to fix climate change, we're not fixing climate change so the planet can feel better. We're fixing climate change so we can live nicer.
Yeah,
that's why we're doing,
you know, and
it
works.
Because we don't like our air conditioning bill.
And it works, too. When we single out one specific thing and we say, you know, we need to say that, you know, I'll take save the whales, for example. You know, we put our minds to it as a species and went out and said, you know what? Yes, let's save the whales. We're over hunting them.
That's why when people talk about the dolphin is smarter than humans, I go, no, it's not, because the dolphin doesn't realize the dolphin has no power to affect other species, like in terms of realizing that others are in danger and doing things to protect. Like, we are smart enough to go, yeah, we want to save the passenger pigeon. Oh, sorry about that. We want to save the condor. Oh, sorry about that. We're never going to do that again. So if you're an endangered species, we can actually activate our lives to try to protect you.
Yep.
Whereas other species are like, I didn't even know a condor existed. So.
Yeah, they probably. Just, I mean, a dolphin. If a dolphin saw a condor, he'd probably laugh at it. And go, hey, where's your fur, man? You're bald on top.
Yeah, you know. And by the way,
let me go blow some bubbles.
Show me a hospital in the ocean that was built by a dolphin. Sorry, they just don't exist.
Well, you got to go way down deep.
Yeah. And by the way, if dolphins are so smart, how come they get caught in tuna nets all the time?
Yeah. Right? Now, I will say, you know, I am impressed with their bubble fishing thing.
Oh, sure. Yeah, exactly. But they wouldn't be so easy to catch in a net if they were so smart. You'd think they'd invent anti-net technology. But they don't.
You know, why don't they just bring out a switchblade?
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
Right?
Exactly. Why don't they invent a knife down in the ocean that could cut through a net no problem? Like, I'm in this net, no problem. I'll just cut my way through it. So anyway, that's my Earth Day thing this morning. All right, Steph Curry's streak came to an end. Oh, that's too bad.
Well, all good things must come to an end, right?
Well, big deal. He was just absolutely phenomenal. I mean, just single-handedly took a team that has no business being in some sort of playoff conversation. I mean, look at this team. This team, the thing about this team, Klay Thompson hasn't played in forever. When was the last time Klay Thompson played a game? The finals against Toronto? He missed all of last year. I think that's the last time we saw him. It was June of 2019. Draymond Green isn't very good. James Wiseman, their draft pick, is now hurt. He's been on and off. They have nobody. They have absolutely nobody on the team other than Steph Curry, and he's single-handedly taking a team that is really has no business being anywhere near a bottom part of the Western Conference playoff standings, and he's got them right there. So naturally, people are looking at Steph and seeing this remarkable run, and they're going, well, how many, you know, is he an MVP candidate? Well, this is an old debate, right? This is a debate that doesn't really go away in sports, which is, can you get an MVP candidate from a team that's not very good? Can you have an MVP on a team that is either A, not going to make the playoffs, or B, when they get there, they're not going to be really strong? Like, they may survive the play-in game, but very likely going to get blown out by a Utah Jazz team or a Phoenix Suns team. Because, as I said earlier this week, one-man shows don't work in an NBA playoff series. When your only threat is one guy, you can knock that team right out of the playoffs. You need to partner him up with somebody else or some other threats, and Golden State doesn't have any other threats. And Steph Curry is not going to win four games out of seven by himself with a cast of characters that are nowhere near his level of play. So is he a valuable player? Yes. Is he the most valuable player on the Golden State Warriors? By 1,000 yards, if not more. Is he the most valuable player of the league? Well, that's not, it's hard to really assess that given what value does he have in the larger picture. All right, Nikola Jokic is an MVP candidate. Joel Embiid is an MVP candidate. Right? I mean, Steph Curry has been remarkable. Dan Wolkin has pointed out the statistics at USA Today today. They're fantastic. In these last 11 games, he had 157 three-point attempts. He's made half of them. That's 78 have gone in. It's when you are on a run like this, the basket looks 25 feet wide. That's what he's doing. But the end result is Golden State is a 500 team. And we don't want to have, or we haven't had a real sports society that says, well, they're a 500 team, but they'd be a lot worse if he wasn't playing. You could find a whole bunch of guys that would fit that, and he's the best of those type of players. Look at all the teams that are sort of mediocre. There's one guy that's probably leading that team to that level of play. And Curry in that group is the best of that group. But when you're talking about guys who are making an impact to teams that have championship level potential, he's not on that list. Because Golden State does not. Right? The Warriors teams that won championships and dominated basketball, they were must-see TV, without question. Like they would make an East Coast guy stay up late to see their matchups against the Rockets or the Thunder or the Lakers, whoever they were playing. That you'd go, man, that's a good game. I might have to stay up a little late for that. I may not be able to stay up all night, got to work in the morning, but I can watch at least the first half. That was a real conversation people were having on different time zones when it came to games that Golden State were playing out in Oakland and San Francisco. Now they're only must see because of him. Like you're not drawn to their team. You're drawn to him. You're just drawn to watch him shoot threes and knock 50% of them in a game that they might win or might lose.
But not only shoot threes, but shoot them from places we never thought were possible.
Yeah, right.
And so doing exactly. It effortlessly, like, oh, I could go and do that.
He is a very unique NBA player. I mean, the kind of shooting touch that he has is so remarkable. It's historic.
Would we go as far as saying best pure shooter in NBA history?
You probably could. You could have a fun barstool debate about it, but it would be legitimate. I mean, you'd probably have a number of other people coming in.
But
it's in the conversation.
That part of the argument I always find hard because it seems too new. And it feels like, you know, the best thing I saw is the last thing I saw type
yeah.
deal.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't remember anybody really talking about that growing up, like in the heyday of the 80s.
Right.
I don't remember anybody going, who's the best pure shooter?
Was it Pistol Pete?
Yeah, right.
And was it Larry Bird?
Yeah. We never had that level of conversation.
Every time he puts it up, you're like, oh, that's in.
Yeah, it's he's fantastic. And you know what? Like I said, it's like you said, all good things come to an end, and his 30-point run, you know, stopped. But in their loss to Washington, does he have them, you know, in the play-in conversation? Yeah, they're in the play-in conversation, and that's part of the benefit of the NBA expanding the playoff teams by just a little bit, right?
But is that MVP worthy?
But that's just, to me, it's just not MVP worthy. I need the players that have seriously impacted a team's championship level potential. I'm glad that, you know, I'm okay with the MVP being voted on before the playoffs because sometimes playoff performances could really skew your impact during the regular season. But if you're a team that has legitimate shot at the playoff, at the championship, even if you don't win it, but you're in the conversation, that's where your MVP comes from.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
We are doing Earth songs today. What's this one?
Sun Is Shining by Bob Marley.
Wonderful. Just didn't know the name of the song.
You had to figure Bob Marley had something, right? He probably has a couple more.
I liked what you said, that all the Earth songs are slow.
They are.
They were very sappy.
Very sappy.
We're not seeing, like, Disturbed write a song about Mother Earth.
No, we're not.
Oh, goodness gracious.
And they might write about Mother something.
Right, that's very true. NFL owners have got some new rules that they voted on yesterday.
All
right, here's a couple. One, the no sky judge. All right, so that's kind of bummed. But I understand the argument for the anti-sky judge. I don't necessarily agree with it. If I was an owner in the NFL, I would have voted for that. But I do understand you don't want your officials on the field to feel like there is an authority over them that will just correct any mistake that they make. You want your on-field referees to be on top of everything. And you don't want them having in the back of their mind, like, well, it doesn't really matter if I miss this. Somebody upstairs will just get it right. That doesn't lead to good play. It leads to sort of, because if they miss it upstairs, you want your officials on the field to be sharp. And having somebody that will always correct your mistakes all the time doesn't let you be sharp. I get that argument. I get it. I wish there was a method, though, because we're seeing too many mistakes that are not getting overturned. And we're seeing challenges that aren't, for whatever reason, aren't being corrected by replay. But that being said, so there's no sky judge. There is something interesting. Now, as you know, if you've listened to this show a long time, I think the onside kick is a waste of time. It never works. And when you need one, you never get it. In fact, if you need one, you might as well just concede the fact that your team is going to lose because they're not going to get the onside kick. I've actually said the radical proposal of having you need an onside kick, run an offensive play, like needing to get, 20 yards, 15 yards, whatever it is, on one offensive play, or you turn the ball over at that moment, is a better idea, even though it's super radical and sort of kind of off the grid, because it's at least better. At least there's an opportunity for a level of success rather than the ridiculous onside kick. But the owners did approve a one-year experiment. I like how they term that, because it's if you love it, it may not come back. But here, to make it easier, and this is what they saying, the receiving team is now going to be limited to just 9 players within 25 yards of the ball. That means 2 players have to be outside of 25 yards. So, you know, it's still stacked against the kicking team to get the ball, but it's a little easier. Here's one statistic, though, to show my point. Last year, only 3 teams recovered 67 onside kick attempts. 3. That's the lowest ever. It's always like that. Like, when was the last time your team, when you needed an onside kick, got one? I can't even remember the last time the Steelers.
That's why I keep going back and saying I think the last team that could say that's the Saints.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that was the last successful onside kick was the halftime, coming back from halftime onside kick. I know
Steelers had one in Super Bowl 30 against Dallas, which was awesome. Totally caught the Cowboys off guard.
It's terrible. I get rid of it, please.
The only time it works is when you completely and utterly shocked the receiving team.
Yeah.
Like when you do it when it's completely unexpected.
Coming
like,
out at halftime of the Super
right.
Bowl. No one was
out
expecting
at halftime of the Super Bowl. Same thing with the Steelers. Like just at a moment where you didn't think they needed one and they did it and they got it and it was fantastic.
But like you said, I mean 99% of the time when a team needs one, they're not going to complete
it. They're not going to get one. And so, even like I said, we've talked about this, that one play option, you know, to get 15 yards. It's like a fourth down and 15 from like the 20-yard line or whatever it is.
Yep.
So if you miss it, the other team will just take over where you failed, and it would be like recovering an onside kick. And that is radical. That is totally different. That is such a rule that is, you know, it's like on 11, right, of rule changes. But at least if I went to 100 NFL fans and said onside kick attempt or this one shot for 15 yards play, you would take that every time. 100 people out of 100 people would say it. because I'm not alone in thinking that the must need onside kick is a waste of time. It just is. It just gets. And here's the other thing that bothers me about onside kicks. And most of the time, the kicking team doesn't even execute it properly. Like, how many times do you see that? Where you're like, well, they got to get this onside kick with about 60, about a minute and a half remaining. And the kicker just, oops, he pops it straight up in the air. Whoops. That was supposed to be on the ground. Sorry, guys. They just easily caught it. That happens all the time. All right, this actually may be better. This might actually lead to some, And don't get me wrong. I don't want it to be easy. I'm on the receiving end too. You know, my team is trying to protect a 2-score lead. I don't want the onside kick to be a piece of cake. But I also want opportunities when you're down 2 scores within a minute. I want to feel like the game isn't over. But most of the time, let's be honest, the game's over. I mean, this is the way it is. If you're down 2 scores and under a minute remaining, pretty much the game's done. That's it. So that was one of them. Also, the NFL is really going to go after taunting, but not celebrations. And that just sort of maintains what they believe. They don't like taunting, and I don't think anybody does. I think it's bad. How they define taunting is still up for some debate, but they would not target celebrations. Now, listen, I remember in the 80s, the NFL was no fun league because they started in the 90s especially. They really started taking celebrations out of the game. And I remember people complaining about it, but I kind of understood why they were doing it. It seemed like every player had a gimmick, right? A sack dance, a Nicky shuffle, a fun bunch. It felt like all these players or groups of players were doing some choreographed thing after every... I mean, Mark Gastineau did a dance after every sack he had. Like, after a while, you're like, okay, we got to get to the game. All right, it's fun. This is great, but this is the third time you've done it today.
Yes, but it was awesome.
Yeah, but after a while, you're like, if we did this for everybody, for everything that they do, we would never get the game.
Can they just go and, like, you know, run 20 yards down the field and point to the first down like they do?
I guess they could. I guess it's not technically taunting, right?
Or swing the imaginary baseball bat.
The NFL, like, listen, when you're a league and you're running things, you worry about the slippery slope, right?
Yes.
That was the problem. Like, the Gastineau dance was fun, but what they were afraid of was, like, a wide receiver going, hey, you know, every time I catch a ball, I do a 20-minute dance-a-thon. And every time, and, like, you would have to allow that if you're allowing Gastineau to do his sack dance. So every 4-yard out pattern that the guy catches, he puts the ball down and he does a 15-step move because that's my dance. That's what I do after I catch a ball. And the NFL's like, yep, we got to let you do that. And then the running back's like, well, every time I gain a yard, I do a twist and a turn for every yard I gain. And then we market that, we put it on videos and T-shirts, and we sell it on the side. And the NFL was like, no, we're not doing this. But it did take away a lot of the fun that the league was having. I mean, it was fun. I mean, the Icky Shuffle was kind of cool, right? There were, you know, not everybody was Barry Sanders just handing the ball back to the official when they scored a touchdown. There was a lot of money to be made if you could sell T-shirts and videos on the side of your choreographed dance. But the NFL has sort of softened up a little bit, and that's good because they took a lot of hits for celebrations. Because remember, the NFL said, well, it's not that we're saying you can't celebrate. We have to put some meat behind it, so you're penalized for celebrating. So how many times did you see a touchdown and then the flags would start coming about because the players lost their minds because they scored late or they scored on an unbelievable play. And the league was getting hit all the time from fans going, it's too much, stop. Let some fun back into the game. So overtime in preseason games have been eliminated. I got to be honest with you, I didn't even know they played overtime in preseason games. I'm like, well, all right, great. That was a brand new thing. They actually played overtime in preseason games. Can you imagine being the players going, oh, no, we're not. We're doing this. If you're a coach, though, you'd be like, well, we got to run our preseason. We got to run our overtime packages in preseason, I guess. And a change in a rule that would now force a loss of down if 2 passes are completed behind the line of scrimmage. Completed a study of a sharp drop in offensive holding during the 2020 season. All right, so there you go. So that's what the NFL did. So
you're forgetting the one big one.
Onside kicks.
The numbers.
Oh, yeah, the numbers. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Which means that we're going to have a whole barrage of wide receivers going one through nine.
So if you're a player and you want number three and you're a wide receiver, you can have it. Yeah.
How many jerseys are going to have to be rebought now?
Yep. This is why I don't buy jerseys.
That's right. Until they retire.
Until they retire. I don't buy jerseys of active players because I don't know what that active player will be like in a couple of years with my team or what he'll be like society-wise. Like if you had an Aaron Hernandez jersey. And
end up like Jake Asman, who has like four Jets jerseys and all those players aren't on the Jets anymore.
Right, exactly.
They're still playing. They're just not on the Jets.
But also, now you got new numbers. But yeah, I remember Brian Bosworth got in the league and in college he was 44 and he petitioned the NFL so he could have 44. He had a company that was like Boz 44 and 44 or something. He had a whole marketing thing based on 44 and the league went, no, you can't be that number, but you could be 55. And he was like, I could be 99. It's irrelevant. I need to be 50, like 44. Unless it's 44, that's the only thing I care about. And they were like, "Well, too bad. Now you basically can. You can be the numbers." I don't know. Like, why do they wait till 2021 for this?
Does anybody care?
Does anybody care about like?
No, but I guess the whole reasoning behind it. I'm trying to remember which team it was. One team. It was the. I'll think of it. But a team was running out of numbers. It was the Kansas City Chiefs. They're running out of they've retired too many numbers, but I think between 20 and 30.
Oh, right. So they were like, well, if you want positional players to be 20 to 30, we don't have any more of those.
Yeah, we're out.
We're out of those. All right. So the NFL said, sure.
So they're like, I guess so.
I don't want my quarterback to be 97.
No, there's certain rules.
All right. That's what I just.
There's rules of to which number you can have and you can't have.
Okay.
Like defensive backs can be 1 through 49.
Okay.
Quarterbacks or running backs, fullbacks, tight ends, and wide receivers can be 1 through 49 or 80 through 89. So they cannot be in the 70s because that would just be weird.
That would be weird, handing it off to 78.
Yes. Now, one thing that will remain safe is that, if you're wearing your favorite offensive lineman's jersey, it'll pretty much stay the same number.
Pretty much stay the same. All right.
That brings up another point. Does anyone ever buy an offensive lineman's jersey besides family members?
Yeah, well, that's true. That's a good point. I knew some friends in Denver that would buy the most obscure player's jersey that they could find on the rack. Like they would go to the Broncos store and they would find like.
Was that because it was the cheapest?
I don't know. I don't know the rationale behind it, but they would brag that they owned a particular person's jersey, and I would go, really? Wow, that's amazing. And they would say, oh no, I think they just wanted to feel unique, or they wanted to be like, I'm the only one that owns this jersey. And I'd be like, all right, don't forget Tub of Towels for you, the heavy duty messes that you need. You need a heavy duty cleaning towel, and Tub of Towels is it. It breaks down the bonds that hold dirt and grease on the surface. It cleans just about everything. And I've been listing all these for you: grease, paint, tar, chalks, silicones, permanent marker. That's a great one. Permanent marker, by the way, because, permanent has a term in it that makes you think it's forever. Yeah, it'll get rid of permanent marker. Ink, glue, wax, food, drink stains, bird messes on your car. Use it in your garage for the equipment. Use it on your car. Use it on your grill. But you can bring it inside. Clean the stove. Clean the counters. I told you, I cleaned my stove with it one time. My wife was like, what did you do? This thing is too clean. And I was like, I know, but Tub of Towels made it clean. It's made in the USA, easy on the hands with aloe vera, vitamin E, and lanolin built into the towel, and the vapor lock lid snaps shut, stays locked in, a tight seal, keeping the cleaning wipes nice and moist. Ready for Tub of Towels? You can get them at O'Reilly, AutoZone, Advance, Napa, and Pet Boys. Tub of Towels for those tough dirt. All right, we'll come back. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. You need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. It is Earth Day today, so this is why you're getting the melancholy music that we're playing today. Happy Earth Day.
That's right.
Yay. Plant a tree. Have you ever planted a tree?
No.
No, we just did. We just did in our front yard, this little tree, but we planted them. And it's weird to plant something and you're like, in 20 years, this is going to look beautiful. I told my daughter the other day, the tree is, it's nice, it's in the front, and it's going to have these purple leaves, and it's going to look great. But I told my daughter, when your kids come to visit grandma and grandpa, this tree should start to look like what it's supposed to.
You know what? You can sit underneath it, read a book. It'll provide plenty
exactly.
of shade.
Exactly.
In 20 years.
Yep. Yeah, when I die at 90, maybe I can fertilize this tree a little more. Like, it's weird. It's like when you plant a plant, you expect it to go in the growing season.
Yeah. Now, I've had a tree planted in my name.
Sure. Sure.
I was given that as a gift once. And I'm like, thanks.
I went to a Christmas tree farm once, and it was awesome. It's like there's levels of trees. Like, this, we planted this 5 years ago. We planted this 10 years ago. Like, their whole business was planting a bunch of trees and then waiting years and years and years for them to be cut down to celebrate Christmas.
Yeah, it's got
to
be a tough biz.
Right?
Like, because you can only go so far, and then you're like, well, I'm tapped out.
Picking out a Christmas tree at a Christmas tree farm is one of the hardest things I've ever done.
Yeah.
It's so difficult because you can't. You see a tree outside, and you're like, I don't know. Is this going to work? I don't. I nearly had a mental breakdown.
That's why you just go fake.
Get the perfect Christmas tree. I know. It's Wake Up Call.